So we are here this morning on our next centenary walk with the lovely Nadia Nagamutu, and we're in Chiddingston in deepest Kent, and it's October and the sun is out and it's the most glorious day. We feel blessed because there have been so many terrible days. Saturday was dreadful, but the weather is glorious. So Nadia, welcome, and thank you for coming on this 10k walk with me.
Thank you.
Do you want to just start off by telling our listeners what it is you do, because I think it'd be great just to set the scene for today's walk.
Yeah, so my company, Avenir Consulting, is all focused around creating gender-balanced organisations, and the way that we approach it, and certainly based on the research that I've done, is really understand what are the barriers that are preventing men from taking on the caring responsibilities that they would like from an organisational perspective. So what are the organisations that are supporting men in using some of the policies that are available to them, like shared parental leave, for example, and what's the difference between those organisations and those that actually the policy's there but the men aren't using it, and what's the impact therefore that it has on men in terms of their health, their well-being, but also if men are more active in caring. Certainly what my research has shown is that it actually supports women in their progression in the workplace too. So I'm coming from it at a slightly different angle, I suppose, compared to some who are supporting, you know, women, which is I'm completely all for, of course. Women returnships programs in particular are an amazing thing that absolutely 100% needs to happen, but actually what more could we do, and how could we expedite creating gender equality and gender balance in organizations even more? And yes, supporting women is one way, but actually supporting men in allowing them and supporting them, encouraging them to step away from the workplace is actually another way in which we can really push this agenda forwards. And I think that the gender roles of what a man traditionally does in providing for his family, bringing in the money, and the traditional roles of what a woman does and in the household and taking care, it's going to take a long time to break those barriers down and what the expectations of society. But actually what we're saying is now is that the organisations have moved on, and society's moved on in certainly in the last 40, 50 years, where there's so many more women in the workplace. Obviously they're in certain pockets of the workforce,
yes.
But nevertheless we do have a good representation of women in working in the workforce these days in the UK. But actually we haven't yet supported men to step away from the workplace and for it to be okay and accepted, and for it not to emasculate them,
yes,
that they're taking on caring responsibilities. And I think that's certainly one of the things that I'm working towards. It was a personal story really that led me down this way, and it was when I had our baby girl back in 2014, and I was trying to think about how I was going to still achieve the career that I wanted, that I was still driven for, and having a conversation with my husband and thinking, well, actually, because he really wanted to take on some of the parental leave, he wanted to take shared parental leave, he wanted to be a very active father, but actually his desire wasn't enough. And I kind of realised this, that as he put forward his application to his organisation, and they took ages to provide a form for him to complete, and the reason why they took ages is because they were designing the form for him.
Oh.
So, you know,
they didn't have one in place then.
Exactly.
He was a pioneer.
Exactly. But, you know, good on them. They supported him, and his, you know, as far as I know, and I don't think he perceives this, his career hasn't been hindered as a result of now working more flexibly and having taken that shared parental leave time off. And I kind of realised that if I wanted the career that I wanted, he and his organisation needed to support him to do what he wanted to do.
Yeah, it's a reciprocal thing,
yes,
isn't it?
Yes, exactly. So the organisational culture impacts what men are able to do, and if men have the desire, actually it will therefore have an impact on women and what they're able to do.
Yes. What does it mean now how to have the right to vote, to you personally? It's funny, isn't it? I have to be, you know, in all honesty, you know, I was born and brought up in the 80s when it wasn't a question. Yes. Obviously 100 years ago this stuff happened. So it's funny, it's only more recently have I ever thought, oh my goodness, you know, it's almost like I've taken it for granted. I've never actually reflected on the fact that I can and that I'm able to vote and that I should, you know, that I should really be thankful for all those people who, you know, were strove to actually, you know, like, yes, Millicent Fawcett.
Yes.
So it's funny. So it's a moment to reflect and recognise that.
Exactly. And it's only through the, you know, the celebration of the 100 years that I've actually started to think, my goodness, you know, what could the world have been like? So we're striving so hard these days for female equality.
Yes.
And with, as you say, hashtag Me Too and the gender pay gap reporting.
Yes.
You know, the BBC presenters pay gap, you know, that all came out obviously in the news a year ago too. And we get so focused on the disparities, but actually when you think of the journey that we've made over the past 100 years, yes, we still need to fight, but actually we've come so far, and it gives so much positivity to me, and certainly some it drives me, you know, it allows me to continue the drive knowing that change is possible.
Yes.
But the freedom that I have in my life and being able to do the things that I do and that I want to do, so many women still don't have. And I think it's that recognition and is part of the reflection that yes, in our society we have it, and women in our society, you know, do have a lot more freedom than other women in other societies.
Yes.
So again, I think it's just that pause for thought. It means to me to be thankful to those people who pushed the agenda forward and got something so significant as the women's right to vote.
Yes.
But actually there is still more to do, and just because it doesn't feel as significant as the women's right to vote, it still is a huge thing that we're working towards for our daughters and for other women across the world, so globally.
Yes.
And for men too.
Yes. And I think this is an interesting point, isn't it? We talk about sometimes, you know, depending on how we've been fortunate enough to have been born and brought up, that these things don't necessarily form part of our consciousness because we have them as an assumption there. Sometimes becoming a parent brings things into sharp focus in a way that maybe they haven't been there before, and suddenly awareness that not only you're building life for yourself, you're building a life,
yeah,
and
the society,
the future,
yes,
generation,
exactly,
the next generation,
yes,
and what do I want, what change do I want to see,
exactly,
for my own family. And I think the out and out challenges that women had 100 years ago of not being given the freedom to vote, you know, that those were very visible challenges that people had and legislated, mm-hmm, against them,
exactly.
But the ambition through the gender pay gap is to really bring to remind everybody that the fight isn't won yet.
Yeah.
And I use the word fight because it is a struggle. And I think in many respects, some of the challenges around gender and equality have gone underground and become corridor confirmation. You know, the example of the BBC pay,
mm-hmm,
yeah, being just such an example that, you know, we have this, I had this belief that somehow that the BBC is this nurturing organisation, only to find actually, you know, if it's at its most senior levels, there's a discrimination going on between men and women.
Yes.
Carrie Gracie will be speaking at the Forsyth Society conference next month, and in the pay award that she was given to counterbalance what she'd lost out on, she donated all those funds to the Forsyth Society.
I thought that was incredible.
Yeah, I'm really excited to hear her speak.
Yes.
So we were talking about the difference that becoming a parent makes and how that's changed your outlook and what you're trying to do in terms of building a life for the next generation.
Yeah, and I have to say, like, being a parent is has had a massive impact on my outlook. Really, there's much more purpose and the reason behind what I'm doing, apart from it, me obviously strongly believing that it's the right thing to do for society in general. Actually, you know, I've got a little person now who's going to be entering at some point the world of work, and I'm striving for her to live in a world and a society where she just gets treated as a person, not because of her gender and the expectations that her gender, the skills that she might offer.
Yes.
Like a caring, sensitive,
nurturing
leader. Yeah, that exactly.
Yes.
And I think if she can be, you know, treated as a person, and everyone get, you know, it doesn't matter your gender, that we get rid of those boxes, we get rid of the stereotypes that we're placing people in, and the expectations that we have on people just because they, you know, yeah, we stereotype them to have certain character traits based on their gender. Let's just treat people as people. And I the type of discrimination, you know, the pay gap that we have, if I can support actually some way towards rectifying that in the work that I'm doing, then actually it means a lot to me.
I think the challenges around gender equality, fairness, you could almost say, you know, there's been so much work done, but there is so much more work to do, because those challenges are somehow, I'm going to get some very squishy stuff underfoot here, those challenges have somehow gone underground and are less visible, and therefore by virtue of that fact more insidious, because they're there but not necessarily talked about until something like the gender pay data opens it all up.
It's just the start, you know. There's so much more reporting we can do. I think what the UK government has actually done to enforce gender pay reporting for companies of 250 plus,
yes,
is a brilliant first step. And actually a lot of the other countries around the world are looking at us to see how we've done it and to maybe follow suit. So I think it's a great step.
Yes.
But there's so much more data we can look at, and the best thing and the most reassuring thing is that actually we're starting to look at it. We care.
Yes.
You know, we're a society that actually is bothered. We want to find out.
And my sense that as contributors, we do our bit to keep the conversation going.
Yeah.
And some people do that through their work, through followers on Instagram. These are almost changing conversations at the most local level.
Oh, yeah. But that's what it's about, these little nudges.
Yes.
You know, sometimes I do step back and think, oh, what difference am I making? You know, little me doing my little work, you know, in this small pocket. But actually, I don't know how many people I've touched. I work at an organisational level. You know, I don't know the ripple effect I'm having. Maybe one person I spoke to took something away with them and has changed the way that they think about things.
Yes.
Or might reflect on what they say to their son or daughter. So I think it's important that we're all doing something.
Yes.
Even if it's just raising awareness. So, you know, I went to my daughter's school earlier this year, and fortunate enough, the head teacher was incredibly open for me running a session with his teachers during Inset Day, and just it was amazing, because these people, these teachers have access to our little people, you know. They have a lot, as well as parents, they have a lot of influence.
They certainly do. You're so right.
So I'm working, some of the other work that I'm doing is actually trying to work at that level, within schools, to think about the unconscious biases that we bring to the table and to start reflecting and being aware of the language we're using and how it impacts young people.
What is the problem with the word feminist?
Language is fascinating. Yeah. There's no problem with any language we use. It's the meaning that we place on the language that potentially could be problematic. And not necessarily the meaning we place as individuals, but the collective meaning. So what I mean by that is that you and I might have a different interpretation of what being a feminist is. And we don't know, we're just using the term and just assuming that the other person understands us in the same way.
For me, it's about achieving a fairness for people. And actually, as far as women are concerned, there's a bit of catching up to do, rather a lot of catching up to do.
Yes, but and again, I do think that it depends on the lens that you're placing. So if you're looking at the issues that women face with regards to gender, with pay gap, sorry, with regards to the gender pay gap, with regards to hashtag Me Too, with regards to the glass ceiling and some of the funnel effect that we see through organisations, and many other ways that female discrimination plays out in today's society, then yes, we could say feminists is, it's about equality, but because females, women in society have less equality, most of the focus is on women.
Yeah.
Yeah. However, the work that I do is, I suppose, just offers a much more systemic view of, striving for gender equality, and that is that actually if we look at the world through a male lens, do they really have equality? Now, I get this all the time where people, women particularly, say to me, oh, you know, I can't believe you're focusing on men. You know, they're the privileged ones. They're the ones who don't have to, you know, they get paid for doing more, you know, the same job, you know, doing the same thing as a woman and all of that. And they can get quite angry, to be honest. and I sort of think, well, hang on a second. We're in a world where men feel a huge amount of pressure to provide for their family, to go out and work, to bring in the money, to make sure that their families are cared for from a financial perspective, and yet their desire, more and more we're finding, the men's desire is to take on more caring responsibilities, to be more active, and yet there's a barrier to them doing so.
Yeah, and this generation of parents, as I see it from people that I meet in organisations, want to have more of an active role.
Yeah.
And this is your point about the system, that the system legislates against that.
Mm-hmm.
And there's it's down to important things such as not matching maternity pay with shared parental leave.
Exactly.
So there's something that says, you know, unless you are incredibly well off financially, mm-hmm. you could not afford to have your husband take shared parental leave because it just wouldn't work.
Yeah. So it automatically, the way that the system is set up, it devalues or places less emphasis on the male caring role.
Yeah.
And is that fair? You know, is it fair that we, you know, we make out that men are actually quite incompetent when it comes to, you know, all of the, I sort of, quote something from James Miller, who recently released his second book, Dads Don't Babysit. And he was, you know, he's written a blog piece on how men and dads are portrayed in the media and in, you know, like kids programs like Peppa Pig.
Yes.
You know, this kind of bumbling buffoon who, you know, silly daddy.
Yes.
You know.
That mummy has to sort out.
Yeah. You know, and I'm all with him, to be honest with you. Peppa Pig really just drives me up the wall with the gender stereotyping. But I just kind of think, come on, is that fair? Is that fair that men automatically, before they've even tried, it's not like women, I certainly felt it, when I wasn't like completely competent looking after this, you know, fragile newborn baby. I had to find my way, but I spent more time with our daughter initially.
Yes, yes.
And I think what tends to happen with couples, I'm talking heterosexual couples here, and just to caveat that it's probably different with different types of couple dynamics, but with heterosexual couples, the woman's off predominantly for the first part. They know their baby a lot more, they feel like they're competent, they know the baby's routine. And if the dad has to look after the baby, even for a short period, there's lots of instructions that are fired at this dad to make sure that he doesn't forget to feed the baby or yes. change the nappy at a certain yes. time, or, you know.
Or if the baby's not asleep, can he not sleep?
Yeah. You know, it's kind of, you know, and I recently went to a party where the dad had been given specific instructions what to dress his children in. The mum had gone away for the weekend, and he, you know, it's down to the granular detail of these are the clothes they'll be wearing for this party. I think, well, sometimes actually there is something about women just letting go.
Yes.
And just trusting that there's this adult, the male adult, who is the father of the child or the children, who probably might not do things exactly the same, but the chances are the child will still be alive at the end of it. Let's put it into perspective.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's an interesting point though, isn't it? Because when we leave as forward-moving, career-driven women, we leave employment, and generally a point where we're in a senior role or on the cusp of a senior role, and then all of a sudden we're disconnected from that. Then there's a need to find control and stability and order in our own life, and I see that.
Well, yeah.
You know, to recreate that in the domestic scene, in which case it's having standards, it's having the way things have to be done. Mm. And actually there are days, certainly when you get into my case, when you get to your second child, where you suddenly realise it matters so little. And what matters is you've got happy children. If they're slightly grubby or not wearing matching clothes, that doesn't really matter too much. Mm. Who are the people that inspire you? I'm opening that as a both men and women, because yeah. I think part of these walks has been a reminder to me to say, yes, we're driven by the women that inspire us, but actually there's a lot of men who are on the journey with us in a spirit of equality and fairness.
I speak to so many men and women, but you know, because of the work that I do, a lot of men. And you know, it's the men who inspire me the most. They're not necessarily the big leaders, and I know the question was probably asking for a big name, but when I just work with these men who are open to being vulnerable and stepping out of the strong masculine stereotype and just going, you know what, this is something I really want, and I'd love to be able to be with my children more. You know, I get inspired by realizing that actually society is moving on, that traditional stereotype has been dropped, and actually we have men out there who do want something different for themselves. My husband inspires me because of what he does and his, you know, what he put forward to his work. Yes. You know, that's it. It's not these massive people that, you know, he stepped out of his comfort zone. We had this conversation and he said, you know, but my KPIs won't change. I don't think so, you know. So if I'm away for so long, then, you know, it'll affect my bonus. We had all those conversations and he still did it.
Yeah.
And he didn't know how his organisation was going to react. I speak to a lot of men who are just trying it out. They want it so much that they're just willing to try it.
Yeah, yeah. And not only that, so, and there's the fear of, look at these llamas on the left-hand side here at this point. There's a llama farm, which is just delightful. But I think for a lot of men, there's the worry about what will happen to work when they're not there. But that is a mirror conversation that we have with women too, is it not? That as women, when we take a maternity leave, extended leave, whatever that is, there's always that concern of, well, what's going to happen when I'm not there?
Yeah.
And then hopefully when they actually take the time off, it's an absolute glorious time with a child or the family that they just never knew mm-hmm. was possible.
I know. And, you know, and the research does show, it's particularly coming from Scandinavian countries now who have really pushed this agenda, you know, in terms of male caring so much further than we have, that those families where men have taken much more of an active role with the caring responsibilities, the children are more socially developed, they're, you know, more educationally, their attainment goes up. It's kind of a no-brainer when you look at what the research says the value is of male caring.
I think this is what's so important to me about doing these walks, you know, because and people say to me, oh, you can try and do the walk with some big names. What does a big name mean? Actually, what I want to do is to walk with people who are making a difference, and it doesn't have to be at the stratospheric level. There's plenty of people doing that, but actually there's a whole army of us doing some really, really important work. It's through you, through your research, which is absolutely the right thing to bring men into the equation as much as women. So it's all of us trying to do what we can. And that's what I think is what makes this interesting. I don't doubt there are.
There's loads of big names I could quote. I mean, you've got the chief executives of big companies like Salesforce and Genpact, and, you know, they're all doing amazing things. They're male senior leaders who are advocating, supporting flexible working for all. They see how important it is to get a gender balanced board, and they're doing specific things in their organisation to make sure that there is progress, you know, that women particularly are able to progress.
So I think we should talk about Helena Morrissey.
Yes, yes.
It's an example of a big name, and a big name that's really changed things. In a lot of ways, I heard her speak at Working Families Conference and telling some extremely personal stories and sharing about her husband's journey. So her husband is the stay-at-home dad, so she turned the stereotype on its head.
Oh, big time. You know,
she's got eight or nine children. So she really is, through her own ways of working, but also opening the pathway for others. And sometimes I think there's a stereotype that women pull the drawbridge up behind them. But that's certainly not the case in hers.
Oh. Helena, and I know Helena not really well, but fairly well. You know, I have had a few one-to-one conversations with her. She's incredibly down-to-earth and incredibly open to supporting anyone and everyone. And that's what I really appreciate with her and her and what she offers, is there's this role model, a very strong female role model, who has, you know, as you say, gone against the grain about typical male and female roles in terms of home and work, but is, despite her seniority and what she's achieved and, you know, and who she is, she's just very supportive, is open to being a sponsor to people and pushing the agenda forward, but not in an aggressive way.
Yes.
She makes her points very clearly. Everyone knows what she stands for. And yet it's done in a way that influences people's views, opinions, and she's, you know, in my mind, she really has made a huge impact on today's society.
Yes.
For women and men.
And the announcement the end of last month that the first time that women on boards across 100 top 100 FTSE companies are at 30% for the first time, which is a significant milestone.
Yeah, I mean, it was 12.5%, I think, when the 30% club first set up. And that's why that was
that was the raison d'etre, 30%.
Exactly. Yeah. And there we are. So it took slightly longer. I think Helena would agree. It took slightly longer than they'd hoped for. The ambition was in a shorter space of time to achieve it. But do you know what? It's still an amazing achievement.
Absolutely. And what strikes me reading that article, her post on LinkedIn, was that, you know, the challenges she came up against, and one of a male senior leader saying to her that she, accusing her of trying to ruin British business.
Oh gosh, yeah.
I know. I read that and I thought, okay, that's why we have to keep doing what we're doing. And yeah. I didn't put this on my list of questions to ask you, but to what extent has mentoring moved you forward? Because was it mentoring that you got through 30%?
Yes, I did, indeed. So with 30%, more, I got more from than that. You know, the 30% Club was the offered me the scholarship to do my executive MBA at Henley Business School. So I won the competition, so to speak, to through the 30% Club. But as part of that, then Helena had a someone who wanted to do some mentoring, an incredible woman, and she paired me up with her.
Yeah.
And I through my MBA, I had a huge amount of support through this mentoring program. So the 30% Club run a brilliant mentoring program, which is like a cross-organisation mentoring program. Doesn't not just women mentoring with women, but you know, men mentoring women too, and across across industries.
Yes,
hugely invaluable experience for young women. So I benefited from that, and I can't, and I've had several mentors in my time, from when I was, newly graduated, in fact, through. I've been so fortunate with them, the mentors that I've had, who offer their time for no money, but certainly I hope the reward of seeing someone grow and develop. And I it's invaluable. Mentoring for me has steered me, guided me, offered me the support, the confirmation that, you know, of my thinking, challenged me when I needed it. Just having someone solid behind you who's just that little bit further ahead, or a lot further ahead at times, you know, it's quite humbling that people would offer that support.
What advice would you have for, as a parent, for this generation of working parents coming through?
Yeah. I think it's important for them as a couple to decide what they both would like to happen in an ideal world first. So this is what I'd really like. This is what I'd really like. So both people. So at the moment there's a missing conversations, and this is why, as you mentioned, often couples just default to stereotype. The man, he provides for the family. The woman takes a whole year off after having had a child, and then will go back part time. And that's fine. And so what I'm not suggesting is that couples change that if that's what they both want.
Yeah.
But have they actually had a conversation to understand what they both would like now, but also in the future with regards to balancing work and family?
Yes. And acknowledging that we make choices by the things we do, and that sometimes people feel they have no choice but to take a particular path.
Yes. And often what would happen is, certainly having spoken to many fathers, is that the man defaults to what the woman wants. So he almost pulls back anything that he would like as a preference, because if his partner, his female partner, has suggested that she wants to take a full year, he would do his absolute best to make sure that it's possible for her to do so, as opposed to going, oh, well, yeah, I'd really like to spend some time with baby too. How about you go back?
Yes.
He's less likely to do that.
Yeah. And interestingly, the women I've spoken to where partners have taken shared parental leave, on the other half of their maternity leave, without exception, they've said it's been the best return to work, because they've been able to get up in the morning without the
rush,
panic of drop off, getting myself ready, getting the baby ready, getting food ready, all that sort of stuff, through traffic to get to nursery, to get to work.
Yeah. And do it all again, and coming back.
And deal with a poorly baby, knowing that actually they're at home with a partner who may not do it like we do it, but they're having a good go.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a conversation to be had around almost recontracting how you want life to be, and what the expectation is of them. I think you're right that the recipe you might follow may not be exactly followed by them, but if your baby's okay, that might be okay.
Yes.
But just talk about it.
Exactly. And you know, there might be other ways of doing it other than what you think is the right way.
Yes.
But you're right, you know, and when I went to back to work, you know, I had my husband home looking after her. He actually allowed me to not have to clock watch and just feel a little bit like I was easing back into work without having at the back of my mind always, is she okay? What time do I have to leave? Oh, what if the train's delayed? Obviously, it was for a relatively short period of time before we were both back at work.
Yes.
You know, he took several weeks off, but...
But it's that initial transition of getting you back.
Yes, exactly. Yes. It was just a transition, and it was so helpful for me. No, like I say, it's not for everyone, and that's fine, but what's the missing conversation between couples to see what both parties would like, and how could they make what they both desire work? Both my research for my MBA, the Flexible Fathers research, and the Equals Lives research that I did recently with Business and Community, both research supports the understanding that actually men or families are less likely to take shared parental leave if it's financially detrimental. So finances plays a key role,
yes,
in making that decision. And so that's where government and organisations come in, because A, the government can obviously change the policy around shared parental leave and enforce organisations to offer more. But B, if organisations really want to lead the way and attract more, retain more of their talent, this is a great way of doing it, is saying, you know what, government states this is statutory, but we're offering even more than that.
Yeah.
You come here, you'll be supported. We offer an enhanced parental leave package, and we encourage you to take it. So that's really what the work that I'm doing,
yeah,
is fighting for.
One of the questions I'm asking all my walkers is, who are the people who've helped us on the way, and who might be the people that we'd like to thank?
Yeah, okay. You sort of stumped me with that question, and I think the reason is that there's so many people who have offered me the support to channel my energy to do the work that I do. You know, obviously, fundamentally, my family and my husband, who, you know, I absolutely couldn't have pursued the executive MBA, which actually was the platform for me doing the research and leading me down this path, and certainly couldn't have set up Avenir and work the way I work if it wasn't for him. So I can't emphasize enough really that having a husband who understands what I'm trying to do, but also really advocates it and supports it and supports me, has been absolutely critical and invaluable to me. The 30% Club and Helena Morrissey and Henley Business School for seeing something in me that I didn't even know was there at the time. It was, you know, they read something that I had written. They listened to me and they thought, this person's got something to offer. And as I say, at the time I didn't even see it myself. And then it just emerged from that, this vision that I had of a more systemic gender equality agenda, focusing on men as much as women. And all the people along the way, I had an amazing mentor earlier on, a woman called Hayley Lewis, who has her own company now, Halo Psychology, and she continues to be an inspiration and a support to me. And I could name endless people, to be honest, who have just seen something in me and believed in me and offered me a platform to talk, to speak. You know, Nikki, you're one of them. If I could stand here for ages and just list people,
yes, yeah.
But that's possibly not, that's going to be of interest to other people to hear, but
I think it's, and hearing you talk then, and thank you for that, I think it's a reminder to all of us that sometimes we feel we have to soldier on alone, and actually it is absolutely the right thing to reach out, and it's not necessarily reaching out for help, but in the community of people that we find ourselves with, we always learn something, And I'm conscious of that. Those times when I feel at my most uncomfortable, I'm connecting, meeting new people, I can wait, always having learned something, if not about them, about myself. And sometimes it takes that chance moment or that comment just to remind us, say, no, we have got something to say, and don't lose sight of that. And actually what you're doing really makes a difference.
Yeah, I think it's important, particularly with what I'm saying. When I speak, it can be quite provocative because people might not always see the world the way that I see it, which is perfectly fine, of course. But I'm offering a different perspective, and sometimes that comes back with pushback and challenges. And actually, it's just helpful to have the reassurance sometimes from these people around you that go, keep going, Nadia. Keep going, because you're saying something that's worthwhile and worth pursuing and worth people listening to, popping the imposter syndrome bubble.
Yeah, get rid of it. Yeah. Banish it. Yeah, I love that. Nadia, you're doing really important work, and I think there will be people listening to this who want to find out more about you. So where will they find you?
They can find me via my website, so avenirconsulting.co.uk, on LinkedIn, of course. And Twitter, at Nadia Nagamutu.
Fabulous. Lovely. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming on the walk.
Thank you, Nikki.